Oh, hi, podcast listeners. There's many ways you can listen to the Real Nerds Podcast. You can subscribe on iTunes. You can also subscribe on Stitcher Radio. You want to send us a Twitter message? You can do that. It's so easy, at Real Nerds. Like us on Facebook, Real Nerds Podcast. You can visit our website, realnerdspodcast.com, where there'll be a lot of articles for you to not only read, but to listen to our previous shows. Do you like your stories told through pictures? Then you can also follow us at Real Nerds on Instagram. You can also call us, 720-6NERDS5. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Camera, action!
Well, a real nerd knows who shot, and a real nerd can follow the plot, and a real nerd
doesn't
can...
Doesn't talk film! I'm sorry.
Take it outside.
Well, a real nerd knows who shot, and a real nerd can follow the plot, and a real nerd will give it all they got. Lights, camera, action!
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Real Nerds Podcast. Hands down, the best movie podcast in all the internet. I am Ryan, and I am joined by Brad.
Holy shit, we're in the same room doing a regular episode.
I know. I think it's actually been years.
I think it has.
But it feels good to see you, Brad, because I didn't want to say this earlier, but you're a good-looking guy.
Oh. Do you need glasses?
No, I'm sitting so close to you, I see you for the first time.
I was going to say, like, we haven't, like, looked into each other's eyes for a review in, like, years.
I know.
It's, like, usually it's just a name on a screen.
It is.
I'm just picturing your face.
And the only reason I do is because, you know, my internet, I don't want it to slow down.
Yeah.
And so I just put up whatever the human emoticon emoji thing is.
And all the big podcasts these days, they do video podcasts, and here we are old school, just like,
yeah, because
no video.
I don't think it's that exciting watching me talk.
I don't watch podcasts.
Neither do I. Maybe we just don't know. Now we are like the old hands at podcasting.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's okay. Because every once in a while we see a movie, and it's interesting that this movie, it exists, and that it's as popular as it is. Our film of the week is Terrifier 3. Stay tuned. We'll recommend the film or not, play the trailer, then spoil the film. We'll also talk about the big movie news and stuff we've watched throughout the week. Brad, how was your week? It seems like you were busy here at the beautiful Blug Theater doing events.
Yeah, this weekend's nuts. Gosh, where do I go back? Like, so, yeah, I've been trying to Instacart like crazy this week. And then all of a sudden, I got this idea for a Halloween costume. I was like, okay, I got to get that ready for Saturday. And then we've been planning for the Bug Theater.
It's the 30th anniversary, right?
Yeah, 30th anniversary event. On Saturday, which also coincided with my monthly event of Weird Theater, screening there, and then also, like, screening stuff at the Mayan with friends. And, yeah, so it was, like...
There's a great article. You should check it out on the Westword about the bug. You should read it.
Oh, yeah.
About...
I think I shared it.
Yeah.
About the history of it.
The history of it. It's really cool.
Yeah, I remember recording after all that happened. And it was, like, the anniversary event was... As hectic as it was really cool, and I wish we could do a variety show like that every month because, just give everyone a sampling of everything the bug is capable of because
yeah.
We had, you know, indie movies screened, we had burlesque, we had stand-up comedy, we had, like, a TED talk about the history of the theater, a performance art thing that represents Freak Train that was really great. It was a great show. Yeah, so that's what. How was your week? Oh, you had a big week.
Yeah, I was super busy. I was working, and about a month ago, my wife and I decided to put our house on the market to move back down into the metro area because my wife is an overnight ER nurse, and so her job's down here. My kid is going to school now in Jefferson County, no longer in Clear Creek. And honestly, I really wanted to move back down into the Lakewood Littleton area because I missed being down here, and it's been 7 years and I'm starting out grow my house, and it took a lot of,
and you love driving really far to work.
Yeah. Well, I don't mind that because actually it's good because I can decompress there's times when my job, it's really overwhelming sometimes what I do.
No.
It is.
What?
Yeah, serving burritos is really overwhelming. And so I it's like I immediately get off work and I'm right back in, and I have to make dinner and I have to do all this stuff while, you know, I've just dealt with someone screaming at me or getting in a fight, which happened last week. And, you know, you can't – there's no decompressing. It's always like one thing right to the next. And people know where I live, so going sometimes to the grocery store is really awkward, or going into a restaurant is awkward, just because of what I do first day.
Well, it's going to be fun to have you back.
Yeah,
it's going to be – do more of these in person.
It's going to be great. My basement is almost as big as the house I live in now. My house I'm moving from is 1,400 square feet, and my basement is almost 900. So, yeah, it should be really cool. We'll have to figure something out, because I do want like a podcasting area down there. And my wife said I can do whatever I want with the basement.
Holy shit, Zach's here.
Yeah. Welcome back, Zach.
Where'd you come from?
I thought I got rid of you. I thought I sent you to the mountains.
Now, Zach has not seen Terrifier 3, but he's going to sit in and comment on our stupidity or something. I don't know.
Terrifier, more like Jerkifier.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know. I do like the first Terrifier. I will watch 2 and 3 eventually. So yeah. But I'm just here to have fun with you guys.
Yeah, you know, a funny story is I was rewatching Terrifier and Terrifier 2 like last week. Mm-hmm. Or 2 weeks ago.
To relax.
Technically, this episode is airing before Filmsplosion.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, I watched both of them, and then I went back and put Terrifier in because I wanted to watch the special features. And because I love how they the makeup. And so that night I watched them. I went to bed, woke up. I had to go to work. And so I got in the shower, and I was taking Kellen to school. And I turn off the shower, and I hear, whee! I'm like, oh my god, that sounds like Terrifier music. Kellen accidentally turned on the DVD, and it didn't play the movie, but
I don't know
if you've seen the menu on the Terrifier Blu-ray.
No.
It's literally like Arthur Clown grabbing like utensils and smiling, and there's blood all over his face, and Kellen says, Daddy, what's Terrifier?
Oh, god.
And so
it's a Disney movie. Oh my god.
You know, and then he fast forward to the scene where the lady gets sawed in half, and it's just, he's like, Daddy, isn't that cool? I said, oh, no, I'm just kidding. But just the menu with the dun 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 wah wah wah, it freaked him out. So,
yeah.
The character design of Arthur Clown is really iconic now. Yeah.
You've scarred him the same way that Entertainment Weekly, I think it was summer 2002, movie preview guide scarred me when I first saw the image of Michael Myers standing over Tyra Banks. Like, what is that guy?
Welcome to Dangertainment, baby.
This must be the best of all of them because they've let it go on for 8 movies.
busy week. Hopefully on Wednesday everything will be signed and I'll be good to go. This week on Real Nerds Podcast, we saw Terrifier 3. Brad, do you recommend the third chapter of Art the Clown?
No.
No?
I appreciate, like, the success these movies have had, but, like, I try to remember my review of it on Letterboxd. It was like, they're just a bunch of snuff film set pieces with a very, like, loose narrative connecting them all. I was so bored. Like, not that I love, like, the gore that much. Like, it's pretty gratuitous and, like, not as, like, nuanced as other, like, cooler, violent cinema. But the narrative stuff is so boring to me. Like, so much of the movie is, like, yeah, she's traumatized by, like, the last thing and she's figuring it out. And it never really goes anywhere for me. And then, yeah, some of the gore stuff is pretty cool, but also a lot of it's, like, a little cartoony, I think, compared to the other ones. Like a lot more Looney Tunes-ish. And I just don't really know. Like, I know, like, art's not I don't need an explanation of, like, how art works and how he's, like, back. But still, it's, like, it just feels like the movie's just a bunch of set pieces that they like, oh, this would be cool to film, and then, I don't know, we'll figure out the story, you know, like a 48-hour film. Like, we'll find something to connect them.
I love this movie.
Yeah, you do.
I think they're so fun and so unique. It is weird saying fun when they're that gratuitous, because, yeah, at the end of the day, it feels like a snuff film. But the actor who plays Art the Clown, his movements and how he does things is very unique. And quite accidentally, he created a new horror like icon. Because I remember going to Telluride in 2013 and seeing All Hallows Eve, which Art the Clown is in, but it's a play, he's portrayed by a different actor. And
that's like, that was an anthology film, right?
It was.
It's like,
yeah,
just one film and,
yeah,
a bunch
he
of
was,
others.
He was terrorizing that woman at the gas station. And it just, now that David Thornton, I forget his middle name, but that his stage name is,
I think it's David Howard Thornton.
Howard Thornton. There you go. He just brings this, I don't know the right word, but the film works for me. I think it's really fun. Yes, it's gratuitous, but there's something there. Here's a trailer for Terrifier 3.
You survived the most famous serial killer since Jack the Ripper. The 5-year anniversary is coming up. I think a lot of people would really like to hear from you after all this time. Want to know what it's like to be in the presence of that kind of evil. What goes through your brain when he's close enough to you? You feel his breath. I saw him today.
Who? How can you be sure it was really him?
I could feel it.
Who is this Santa? He's scaring my kid.
Yeah. He's scaring me, too.
Hey, Santa's handing out presents! Julian, run!
Why would he come back here? Even if he was alive, which he isn't. Wouldn't he want to get as far away from here as possible, as far away from you?
We both know this isn't over.
Still buried there, isn't it?
Might be the only thing that could stop them.
Forward to the best Christmas ever, filled with fun, smiles, and laughter.
Terrifier 3 opens up on Christmas Day, or Christmas Eve, with this little girl hearing something in downstairs. And she sees Santa, but it's not Santa. It's Art the Clown. He butchers her brother, her family, and it ends with him reaching in to grab her hand and most likely kill her, too.
I was excited at that point because it reminded me of Halloween Kills or Ends, where, like, the kid falls off the balcony.
Yeah.
It's like, holy shit, they're going for it in this. And then
we flash back to the night with and from Terrifier 2, and Art the Clown pops
was,
up
was
with
decapitated.
His, was decapitated, and he's well, there's a tag scene at the end of Terrifier 2 that we saw a little bit in this one, where the woman gives birth to Art's head, and then Art gets it back. They go to this house and just decide to chill.
I totally forgot who that, like, disfigured face lady was from the second movie.
So she's actually from the first film.
Mm-hmm.
She is the person who survived his attack.
Mm-hmm.
And We learn she commits suicide in this film, but she doesn't really die because she is a vessel for Art the Clown. She's just another demon. He wakes up 5 years later and decides he's going to go after Jonathan and I can't remember her name. The heroine of the film, and I can't believe my brain is just drawing a blank. Is it Sienna?
Sounds right.
She's been in a mental health facility for the last 5 years. She's picked up by her uncle to go live with...
Sienna.
Okay, cool. I got it right. Sometimes my brain stops working. I think that's a thing of getting old.
Mm-hmm.
So she's in an asylum.
Yeah, and so her uncle picks her up, and she's trying to readjust to life, and she's obviously tormented by the images and her experience with Art, certain that he's going to come back. Well, Art is slowly making his way back, and he decides to unleash his fury on Christmas time now, not on Halloween. And he finds a Santa Claus in a bar, and Clint Howard, and he murders everybody, takes a Santa suit, and then he goes to the mall as a mall Santa, and her brother Jonathan is trying to adjust to life in college, then just more bloody mayhem happens.
It sounds great. That's what I'm talking about. It's like, it just goes from like, hey, we thought this cool way to kill someone, so here it is. And then...
Yeah, and it works really well.
Yeah, there's, like, her brother, I thought would figure more into the story, but he really, like, dies off screen. And, like...
You know, when I saw that part in the theater, because, spoilers, the uncle goes to pick up her brother at college because she's having a freak out, because she's certain she saw Art at the mall... And no one believes her, even though he was handing out toys that turned into a bomb that killed kids and stuff. But they have the uncle call the brother, and it's definitely Art the Clown on the other line.
Yeah.
So he ends up killing them both. And it was interesting because that part I thought was some sort of dream sequence.
It was such a weird cut because, like, there's stuff going on with Sienna, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden, like, they show her uncle in the car or whatever talking to Jonathan.
Yeah.
And then it just, like, cuts back to the house, and, like, it's already the climax.
He's literally crucifying the body of...
Yeah, he's already murdered everyone else. Like, it's just, like, it felt like there was a scene missing.
Yeah, I don't know if they did... It was a choice. I don't have an answer because you're right. That part was a little odd. But, I mean, when I saw it in screening was sold out. Mm. And that scene where he's nailing the uncle to the wall and, pulling out his guts and stuff. And then they're saying, her little niece is the head in the basket. My theater gasped. And most people were like, oh, my God, through most of the kill scenes. Like, even the shower scene, which is pretty gruesome. But when he stuffed that glass pipe in that woman's mouth and fed her rats and then slit her throat and the rats crawled out, people in my theater were visibly, and you could feel it. Everyone was doing, oh my God. And when they revealed that it was her brother who was the actual, dead person, people gasped. And I said, wow, this movie is a lot more effective, as a horror film, then maybe I'm giving it credit for. It's definitely the biggest audience I've seen with a Terrifier. The little hints I loved in it is when Sienna is at the mall, they play that Clown Cafe song over the intercom, and then Art the Clown shows up. There's little things. And, you know, I really enjoyed this movie. I just, like I said, I thought it was fun. I think it builds on the mythology, even though it's a little muddled. I think this is another instance where someone who has more money now and isn't under someone's thumb saying, you need to cut this scene, you need to cut that scene, I think he has free will and he makes the movies he wants to make without any cuts that he doesn't. And so sometimes the story gets muddled in it.
Yeah, all the stuff with, like, her dad and the sketchbook and, like, all that supernatural heroine, like, Wonder Woman stuff is like, ugh, I don't get it. Like,
I mean, it was touched on in the second one, but...
Oh, it was, yeah, I mean, she used her... She harnessed her, like, powers to, like, defeat Art with it. But, yeah, it's like, in the third one, it never really expands, and then... It seems like it's like set aside so they can come back for the fourth one as a as a useful thing. But yeah, in the third one, it's very much like, did we even do that? Should we have given her powers? Like, I don't know. Well, let's save it for the fourth one.
I don't know where it's gonna go.
Yeah.
But I actually thought the ending was really melancholy, where she spends this whole time. One, trying to protect her brother, who Art ends up killing. And then her niece, who falls into, like, the void. I don't know where she falls into. And then she realizes that Art has just left. And what I really loved, too, is the last bit of the film is Art sitting at the bus stop waiting for the bus. And then the bus shows up, and he sits down, and he's... beaten and he's beat up and he got his ass kicked, and then the woman on the bus looks at him, and then he goes right back into full Art mode where he's smiling and waves at her. So yeah, I really enjoyed this movie. I had lots of fun. When he's given more money, I think the film looks a lot better. I mean, the gore effects are pretty impressive. Yeah, I just had fun with the movie.
Well, good for you.
Yeah, it is good for me.
No.
Sweet. And that's Terrifier 3. Hey, this is a big movie news story of the week.
It's real news!
So the big movie news of the week is Tom Holland has read the new script for Spider-Man. And he's really excited. He says it still needs some work, but it's almost there.
Maybe they should bring in Martin Scorsese to do a polish on it or something.
So that gets me excited because I have a feeling that he's going to show up sooner than people think. My guess is they're going to start filming this movie in the beginning of the year.
Sounds about right, because usually he's told, don't say a fucking thing. Don't open your mouth about anything related to the Spider-Man.
Yeah, and the Spider-Man as a character features prominently in Secret War. So I'm guessing that they're going to do a Spidey movie and then, or they're going to do Doomsday and then Spider-Man. And then he'll show up in Secret War, to fight Dr. Doom.
Gotcha.
Which would be kind of interesting to see.
Yeah. I mean, fighting his hero, if they're going to keep,
I don't know if Tony Stark, he's going to be Tony Stark, you know, I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do.
You know, I was like, I liked learning about him throughout the week, though, was not that story. Is that I didn't realize he was in recovery. It was really cool.
Yeah.
Very nice to hear.
Yeah, for a couple years. Yeah. I think he's been sober for 3 years.
People are giving him crap for trying to make a non-alcoholic beer. I'm like, fuck you. Like, let him do what he wants.
Yeah, but isn't that helping, though? You know,
yeah, it is. I won't drink non-alcoholic beer because I'm just like, what's the point then? But people do like that because the taste is something they are familiar with.
I talked about this a couple weeks ago when he was... Then they hired the director who directed Shang-Chi is now going to be this director of Spider-Man 4, which will be really fun.
Ooh, nice.
And he's excited about it. And, he took a couple years off. He did that Romeo and Juliet play. Because, I mean, when No Way Home came out, he literally did Uncharted straight into No Way Home.
Yeah, I got exhausted.
So he deserves a break. And then you think it's been 3 years since Spider-Man's been on the big screen. It's a long time. For a while there, I was getting treat yourself to Spider-Man. So, yeah, that's really cool. It's cool news for me. I get really excited because it feels about the time for a new Spider-Man movie.
Maybe the world's realigning because you're getting some Spider-Man more coming your way, and meanwhile, Scorsese dropped production of two of his films.
Did he really? And also on the 4K front, Cary Grant's little scene gem, The Talk of the Town, is getting a 4K release.
Oh, yeah.
Which I cannot believe.
Oh, yeah.
So that's fun. Brad, do you have any movie news for me this week?
No.
No. And oh, for Zach, since he's here, the day the Earth blew up, the Looney Tunes movie,
yes,
is getting a theatrical release in February.
Yes, but I don't come on this show that often, but can I just say, for the record, David Zaslav is an idiot.
Yes, but for more, what's really cool is they're releasing it in as many theaters that they need to put it up for the Oscar for Best Animated Feature.
I know.
Because I have read a review on IGN and Variety, and they say it's one of the best animated movies they've seen in a long time.
Mm-hmm. Is this the one they shelved?
Yep. Well, that's the one that they...
The Wile E. Coyote one?
No. That's Coyote versus Acme. That one is still in the limbo. I don't think it's coming out unless Day the Earth Blew Up, like, really gives Catch Up Entertainment, which is distributing it, a reason to buy it away.
Mm-hmm.
But... I love that they are going to get this out and do that qualifying run because, I'll be honest, I'm angry at Warner Brothers for having let it go in the first place. So if it ends up winning an Oscar and doing well financially, even in some form or fashion, it'll be a nice lesson for them to understand that they shouldn't mess around with these characters anymore.
It's also pretty embarrassing, and we didn't talk about it because I'm not big on talking about people's failures.
No, I know.
But the Joker movie got decimated because you'd give a movie to people and you spit in their faces about who the Joker is and they don't want to see it again.
Right.
I
haven't seen it, so I don't know.
Yeah. But... Well, they spent over $200 million on the film.
Mm-hmm.
Plus on a courtroom drama.
Yes. Yeah, so, plus marketing. So you're at what? 350, 400 million probably.
Yeah.
And then you shelf Batgirl because you want to, the tax thing. There's an article on Variety that they're losing almost twice as much money on releasing the Joker Folie à Deux in theaters than Batgirl costs for them to shelve.
Right.
So you have a business model that leaves a lot to be desired, and it's affecting their stock, and hopefully they'll realize that treating artists this way isn't the best way to go. They're... In the same article, there's talent that won't work with Warner Brothers because they're concerned that they'll make a movie and then Warner Brothers won't release it.
Yeah.
And
Mike DeLuca and Pamela Abdi are really trying to salvage what's already been damaged, and they can't do it if they keep making these decisions.
Yep. So I'm excited because, one, it's a Porky Pig and Daffy movie, which is awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And people can go on YouTube and watch a pretty extended clip of them trying to renovate their house not renovate it. They're polishing it up for the home inspection or the neighborhood inspection or something like that.
Yeah.
It's pure Looney Tunes, and it's based around the style of those Looney Tunes cartoons that came out around the time of the pandemic, where they're anywhere from 7 to 11 minutes long.
Yeah, and those Looney Tunes are a mixture of, I think, kind of the 90s and 30s.
Yeah,
style
30s, together. 40s. Yeah. They've got a 40s design, but an early 40s attitude.
Yeah, yeah. So it's fun. So it's good stuff.
Yeah. And I don't want Warner Brothers to fail. I can only go off of what I'm objectively seeing happen.
Yes. These are films we watch throughout the week in a segment I call What We've Been Watching.
So, this is the stuff we've been watching.
You should call it something else by, things our eyeballs witnessed, or something like that.
Did I tell you why I call it that?
Why?
So, in the early 90s, I was a really big fan of Tales from the Crypt on HBO.
Uh-huh.
And the Crypt Keeper would always introduce the stories, and he'd say, "In a tale I call Werewolf Incarcito," I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever.
Whatever the
So was, mine is Stuff We've Been Watching.
Nice.
In a segment I like to call, that's my little homage.
Nice.
Zach, it's your first time on the show in a long time. What'd you watch this week?
I'll bring you a classic film and a recent film. So for a classic film, it'd be easy to talk about all the horror stuff I've been ingesting for Ballyhoo purposes. But I'll bring up two things. Number one, I watched the 4K restoration of I Walked with a Zombie that Criterion just put out. If nobody's ever seen I Walked with a Zombie, I highly encourage you to do so. Picking up this Blu-ray that also comes with The Seventh Victim might also be a great enticement. Great Blu-ray, tons of wonderful special features. Really cool to see Secret History of Hollywood being used as a audio commentary track / visual essay as well. But the 4K restoration on these things looks fucking fantastic. I've only known this and The Seventh Victim to look like pretty rough from the original Warner Brothers releases because they were doing whatever scan they could. This one just, it's miles difference. So I would definitely check it out. For something that people may not know about, though, I decided to do Republic Pictures horror films. Mm. For people who don't know, Republic was one of those Poverty Row studios. They made a lot of cheap westerns. Sometimes they would make an occasional classic or try to go for higher art. Like Orson Welles made Macbeth there because it was the only studio that would give them the money to do it. But I watched one called The Catman of Paris. This movie is 66 minutes of cheese so good you just want to eat it up regardless of how constipated it makes you. It is very fucking wonderful to watch. Definitely cheaply made. Definitely reusing different angles and footage wherever they can. But that movie saw Catman or Cat People from the Val Lewton RKO unit and said, yeah, what if we like harp on that success and actually give them a cat thing instead of an ambiguity? So it's like the Friday the 13th to Cat People's Halloween, where somebody goes like, hey, Halloween's doing great. Let's rip it off. Friday the 13th happens. I will say, though, that it is a pure joy to watch this if you're looking for MST3K level like cheap movie making, but you're not laughing at it necessarily. You do see the effort. It's like watching Plan 9 from Outer Space to a certain extent. Like, you see the intent, you see what they're trying to do. It's not cynically made just to play in a drive-in. But what I love about it is they scarcely show the Catman and his makeup until the final like 4 minutes of the movie. But when they're showing the cat leaping and out at people and attacking, there's no better way to open up your villain in a movie than by having a cheap set with a very thin tree that clearly is a mere sapling. It has yet to become a mighty forest pine. And you have a guy walking down the street. It's dark and it's cold night out. And then from that tiny tree, a full-grown man howling like a cat just jumps from it. I'm like, oh, you are clearly standing on a ledge right up above frame. This is great. I'm on board for all of this. And then, of course, you need to have a regular-sized cat going through a miniature thinking, oh, no, this is a giant cat thing. But no, and it pulls back, and it's the police looking at a diorama surrounded by curtains to hide from the fact that they're not in a police station. Fantastic stuff. Fantastic Love stuff. It. Catman of Paris. Look it up. But for a more modern thing, I hadn't been to the theaters since Deadpool Wolverine. And I was like, I need to go to a new movie. So I went to go see The Substance. And I wasn't disappointed at all. If you've listened to me on this show before, I've advocated for a film called Society. And this is the successful grandson of Society, more or less. Demi Moore, man. Fucking brilliant in that movie. Margaret Qualley's great, but this is Demi Moore's movie. Margaret Qualley's doing a great supporting job in it. And I do like the bravery she has of putting all that makeup on at the end of the movie. But yeah, just a wonderfully solid satire about image appearance and the expectation of women to look a certain way. And just a very keen awareness of body horror and disgusting shit. Like when Demi Moore's making like crappy French or like bad for you French food while watching the interview with Margaret Qualley, like the slapping and the gushing and whatnot, my theater was cracking up. They were right on board with it, but they're like clearly uneased by it a yeah. little bit. And I will say this, I haven't watched Dennis Quaid in a thing recently or whatever. Like I don't know.
That's because he's a Trump supporter.
Well, regardless though of whatever, I will say that. My familiarity with Dennis Quaid is more like Parent Trap. He's the nice dad in Parent Trap, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, fine, right?
I always think of him as the dude in Jaws 3.
I forgot he's in Jaws 3. But so imagine my shock when he is playing the sleaziest of Hollywood producers of all time, and he is crushing it.
It's always really uncomfortable when he's eating the shrimp.
Yes, that shrimp thing is fucking unnerving. And so, like, I was just not expecting the performances to hit on all cylinders. Like, I know Margaret Qualley's, like, on a streak right now, but hadn't seen Moore and Quaid in a while, so it was just interesting to watch them perform and remind you, like, oh, yeah, they're good at what they do. I am a proponent of final shots in a movie. That final shot in the movie made, I'm not going to spoil it, but that final shot that thing shot it up to the number one, number two spot. It's fighting with Late Night with the Devil for me for my favorite film of the year, because that final shot is fucking ballsy and I love it. And I love how the whole movie just starts off with a simple egg being duplicated. So yeah, that's what I watched. The Substance. Check it out.
Nice.
Go to a theater for it too. And do the same thing where you did with Terrifier. You watch people's reactions. Because that movie's fucking long. And it plays with people in the first, like, hour. Mm-hmm. And then when it starts cranking up, you can see people's reactions turning. Like, I think that people in my audience were prepared for a horror movie. I don't think they were prepared for a Brian Hughes the movie.
Yeah. I don't disagree.
Yeah.
Brad, what'd you watch this week?
The main thing I watched was Saturday Night. SNL film. It might be, it's like one of my favorite things of the year.
Oh, sweet.
Nice. Not that it's funny or anything. It's just, as a filmmaker, watching a film about something so chaotic, and like I just sit there like watching how they make this film, because there's so much stuff going on in the background, and all the shots have to, like, you know, you're thinking about what a take is and how all those things have to match. It just blows, because the tempo of the film is so consistently just manic.
Yeah, Variety called it brilliantly chaotic.
Mm. Yeah, it's like on Letterboxd, it's a cinematic panic attack. Just watching Lorne Michaels try to put together this show that he doesn't even know what it's supposed to be, and balancing all these characters. There's like 20, 30 characters that kind of everybody gets equal screen time. It's nice that they don't, like, you know, focus on, you know, the primetime players individually that much. Is like, you know, they kind of, you know, Chevy Chase gets probably a little more like backstory to him, but everyone else is pretty much dealt equally. Although I think the women are probably focused on a little less, like maybe Jane Curtin the most. She's like,
she's brilliant.
Not in a lot of scenes. But for the most part, everyone gets equal time. Even a lot of people behind the scenes that aren't, like, you know, the name people, like the lighting guys and the sound people and the booth operators. Again, it's just like so much craziness. And then, like, Nicholas Braun plays both Jim Henson and Andy Kaufman in the movie. I was like, whoa, like, like, it's not a choice. Like, it's be interesting to, like, know why that choice was made, because you could have cast somebody else in those parts, but, like, you know, why they do two people. They're easily recognizable as the same person in the movie. So, like, that was, like, I just want to know the secret, like, decision behind that stuff. Because they're both good. And, what else? Yeah, just really, like, a cool insight into, you know, I'm sure it's fictionalized in a lot of places. And there's also cool, like, things in the background. Like, in the writer's room, there's a box of Colon Blow. This is 75, so that commercial with Phil Hartman hasn't been made yet, so it's like it's a prop to be like just like an Easter egg for SNL fans that really wasn't there, you know, when this show debuted and stuff. There's a couple other gags I forget the llamas in there just in the background, like the actual episodes are, because it never gets used in a sketch. You know, the shark head never appears in the movie, like the episode movie thing. But, like, it wheels around in the background and stuff. So, yeah, there's just, like, little Easter eggs like that going on. Nice. Yeah, it's great.
Sweet.
How's whoever plays George Carlin doing? How'd he do?
Again, like, everyone is, like, you know, sometimes they don't look like the person, but they have the right vibe.
Oh, that's good. I'm more down with that than any lookalike.
Yeah. And they just, like, they just cover everybody. Like, it's just, again, there's no one like this, like, is a strong, other than, like, Lorne Michaels is, like, everything kind of follows Lorne Michaels throughout the whole thing.
Right.
But everyone else is kind of, like, an even, like, percentage of the time focused on. George Carlin, like, you know, he's doing coke all the time, so he's, like, in and out of scenes. So just, like, yeah.
That'll be rough to watch, because I have watched the Apatow documentary, and I'm like, that wasn't a fun time for him, though.
Yeah. Shit, there's something that snapped in my head for a second that I want to talk about, and I just totally lost it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm
gonna distract you there. But I think it's good. Check it out. One of the other notable things I watched was Oh, Daddy's Head, which is a Fantastic Fest horror film, yeah. I think, at the Alamo, about this kid who comes back to his like childhood house, and then you find out like why he's all melancholy. When he was younger, his dad died in a horrible car wreck, and like sees him in the hospital, like with this huge bandage over his face and everything. And then his wife decides, okay, I'm going to pull the plug because he's not going to recover. And then they go back to their house in the countryside, and all this weird shit starts happening. And then eventually something from the woods keeps like trying to draw them into the woods and like kind of like setting bait for them. And, you know, the kid kind of sucks. Like, he's kind of a dickhead for someone who, like, I think he's like 8 or 9 years old. His dad recently like remarried this woman who's the one who pulled the plug on him. But the kid's like not attached to her at all. And I assume like, you know, they got married, so they spent like a lot of time, but she acts like she doesn't want kids. So I'm like, if she like, she married this dude with obviously, you know, not a newborn kid. And so she's struggling with like raising this kid without him. And the kid doesn't like her. And then even like his, dad's best friend is kind of like stopping by to like, you know, I can help you like raise him if you want. And the kid is kind of like cold to him too. And I assume like they have a better relationship than she, like him and her. So, yeah, you got this lady who like doesn't really want to deal with this kid, and the kid doesn't like her. And there's like this entity from the forest trying to like screw with them. And, I'd say, the coolest thing is maybe the creature itself has like this mirror face. So it replicates stuff that it looks at. Mm. And eventually like it draws their family dog out there. That's the thing too, is the kid doesn't even like the family dog. It's like,
fuck that kid.
Yeah. Like when the dog, spoilers, gets like absorbed by the creature, like, and then like shredded, you know, they find it, and the kid's just like so obsessed with like, the creature's my dad. I gotta go. Like, I want you know, let me go in the like the bundle of sticks house with to find my dad. And like the dog's dead, and he like doesn't really care that much. Yeah. So, but like, yeah, later on they find like the skeleton of the creature, and it has like this hole in its skull where the mirror should be. Like, that was the coolest part, is like that whole creature idea that it's like a face replicating, yeah, like lizardy thing. But like when it tricks them, it like has the dad's head mounted to it, and you can't really see the body as it's like wandering around, and it constantly like sneaks into the house, like opening up little vents and like trying to convince the kid most of all that like he's really his dad, and you shouldn't trust the other people. Like her, your mom and your stepmom, and like her, his friend and stuff. So, yeah, it's all right.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's pretty. Yeah, the Noble stuff I watched.
Yeah, I'm gonna cheat because, you know, technically we're gonna be off for 2 weeks because Film Explosion comes out. The best thing I watched this week is Andrew Garfield with Elmo talking about grief. Andrew Garfield lost his mom a couple months ago, and he talks about, that it's okay to miss somebody, and that you miss them shows that you really love. It's beautiful. I posted it on my Facebook because it's just a wonderful little thing, because you realize that
it's like a Sesame Street episode.
Yeah. So you realize that he's on Sesame Street talking to Elmo about, loss and grief, and it will help a lot of people. I watched the remake of Salem's Lot, which just debuted on Max last week, I think.
Does the loss of James Mason ruin it for you?
I think the overall picture does. Not that it's horrible. It's fun seeing Lewis Pullman, because I said, man, he looks just like his dad now.
Lone Star.
But my favorite thing when I was watching it, because you have to watch it on Max, is Laura was watching it with me, and she said, what is up with the colors on here? Why are they so crushed? She understands why streaming sucks. And I told her, anyways, if you don't know what Salem's Lot is, it's a Stephen King film or story that takes place in this town called Jerusalem's Lot, and people go missing because a Nosferatu-style vampire shows up, and he's turning the whole town into vampires as well.
We're all vampires, Lisa.
So the creature effect is awesome in this film. Like, the creature looks awesome. He literally looks like Nosferatu, but kind of modern. It just kind of just never really picks up. I don't feel like it's violent enough. It's not creepy enough. It's not a bad film, but I wouldn't say it's great.
Do you think it was worth holding the button, the pause button on it, and just doing it to streaming, or could it have worked in theaters?
No, it couldn't have worked in theaters.
That's sad.
It feels kind of like a TV movie.
What a coincidence!
Yeah.
Because the first...
But not again, there is production value in it, and it looks good. It just doesn't connect with me. But I mean, if you want to see like creepy vampire kids and a cool looking vampire, it's awesome. The final battle with him is kind of a letdown. The only cool part is it takes place at a drive-in, and all the town folk, I guess it's spoilers, who cares? I guess all the town folk are vampires now, and they hide in the trunks of the cars while they're waiting for the sun to go down. So that's pretty cool. But the vampire dies like a bitch in it, which sucks.
Well, it's up to Robert Eggers to rescue your faith in Nosferatu vampires this Christmas.
Yes. I think that movie looks incredible.
I'm excited for that. And this story's been told fucking forever.
And the last thing I'll talk about is I went to Dismember the Alamo. They programmed it for 8 hours, which was awesome. It was 5 movies. And it was just really fun sitting in a sold-out theater, just watching various levels and quality of horror films. The first one was called The Last Slumber Party, which I put on Letterboxd. The movie is garbage. The amateur way it was shot, edited, acted, and lit made it fun to watch. So some of the lines are so stupid, and it's delivered by amateur actors, an amateur director, and an amateur cinematographer. So everything just looks like shit. But in a way, it's so bad that the audience was having fun with it. It's just interesting. The next film I watched was called Mute Witness, which is directed by the guy who directed American Werewolf in Paris. It's about a woman who is mute but not deaf, and she works as a makeup design artist on a horror film in Russia. She's there with her sister, and her sister's boyfriend is the director of the film. He's kind of a douche guy, but he's funny. Not like he's not a douche because he's a bad dude. He's just like a douche, like filmmaker guy.
Stupid douchey douche.
Yeah, and she forgets a mask and goes back to the studio to get it. While she's there, the cute cameraman from her film is filming another one, and it's a sex scene with this masked guy, and then he ends up killing her for real, and you learn that they're making snuff films there, and that it is with and they're sold on the black market. The main bad guy is played by Alec Guinness. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of him. Just kidding. He literally shot, it is fun, they had a little thing at the end where he shot that 10 years before the movie came out, and then he died. So then they had to they just flipped the shot, so it's the same shot but it looks different. It's kind of fun, and it's actually not that bad of a movie. It's definitely the trappings of the 90s thrillers, where there's cheesy and unnecessary nudity in it, and with really weird editing slow-mo things, and the music isn't that great, but it's still a pretty fun movie. The next one was a trauma film called Luther the Geek, which is about a kid who sees a geek in a carnival in the 1930s and decides he wants to be one too, but he also is a serial killer later on, and he's up for parole, and he's been a model prisoner, and two people want him to say he can be on parole. The other one says no, but he wins 2-1. And the first thing he does is he goes to a grocery store and eats a grandma's neck, because that's his thing, is he eats people's necks and rips their like throats out. To some, I don't know who the grandma is, but it's definitely a dude in drag. playing the grandma getting eaten.
Divine.
No, I would recognize Divine.
I'm joking.
But it turns into a home invasion thriller, which it is effective in some parts. There's a great shot of so he gets in the back of the car of this mom, and as she's coming home, she's bringing the groceries in, and there's a and she comes in the last time, and the door shuts behind her, and he gets out of the car and starts running at the door. And the way it's framed is you see her in the foreground, and then the door, and through the window of the door is this actor running up to get her. And it is shot really well. It just goes on about 15 minutes too long. The pace really suffers from it. The next film I watched was Butcher Baker Nightmare Maker, which is a story about it's a slasher film. And this aunt is raising her nephew because his parents die in a car accident, and they show this accident. It's Final Destination 2. Before that, this dad drives into the back of a log truck, and you see his head like get snapped back and everything. It's pretty brutal. And then the woman who plays his aunt is pretty great. Let me look up her name because I want to give her some props. Is Susan Tyrell, who's also a Academy Award nominated actress. She plays the aunt, but she is in love with her nephew. So there's this weird incestual like vibe to the film. It's like a mixture of Paul Schrader's Cat People and Friday the 13th. It's really bizarre. She's really great in it. It's a little campy, and there's some harsh language, and the treatment of a homosexual character is really rough. But I will say that the character who treats the homosexual character poorly is the only one. The film doesn't, if that makes any sense. Like, the film doesn't make him a caricature of being a homosexual.
Right.
He's a normal person. It's the lieutenant police officer that makes him less of a person.
It's,
and it's
the overly prejudiced.
He's a he's prejudiced, and it's interesting because it actually affects his police work, because there's another cop on the who's talking to him. He says, "Hey man, you know, obviously this is abbreviated. You're not looking at this the right way. There's all this evidence for something else," but he can't get past his prejudice. So there's dueling stories going on, and it's really fascinating. And that was fun. And then the last film they showed was James Gunn's Slither.
Nice.
Which is a really great film. I love this film. I know Brad's not a big fan of it. But it is goofy, over the top, violent. And it's interesting when you see it's almost 20 years old, and Elizabeth Banks looks so young in it. And the Rook is great in it. That's Michael Rooker. That's what Kevin Smith calls him in Mallrats commentary, the Rook. And it's just about these slugs that infect people and take over this little small town. It's a mixture of zombie movies and Night of the Creeps. It's fun stuff. Yep. And that's what I watched this week.
Sweet.
Hey, next week on Real Nerds Podcast, we're doing Filmsplosion 2004. I would tell you to send in all your favorite films, but guess what? Too late. We've already recorded it. Let's get behind the curtain of the Emerald City.
We should do like teaser trailer moments for 2004. So like this coming next week, you're wrong about that selection.
Yes. If all you motherfuckers don't put Spider-Man 2 on your list, I'm going to kill you. I swear to God.
Friendships will be tested.
Yeah. Then we just have the whoosh, whoosh.
And then of course,
so thanks for listening. I hope you had as much fun listening as I did recording this episode.
Yeah.
Brad, any parting words of wisdom?
Of course not.
Zach?
If you're going to be a catman in Paris, jump off of a tree that is clearly not built to support you.
I think we all can agree on that.
I agree. Yeah.
Thanks for listening. Until next time, we'll see you at the movies. Well, knows who shot a real nerd. Can follow the plot at a real nerd. Look to the only gods. Lights, camera, action. Real nerd.
Thanks for listening to Real Nerds Podcast, a Nebulous Visions production. Stream or download episodes, read articles at realnerdspodcast.com. Stream us on Apple or Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or iHeartRadio. Follow us on Facebook, Real Nerds Podcast. Twitter and Instagram, at Real Nerds. Watch us on YouTube, Real Nerds Podcast. Email us at realnerds@gmail.com. Call us at 720-6NERDS5. Thank you to Sparks Mandrill, Mike at Plan 9 Studios, and Bolognium for all of our groovy theme songs. And that's how you fucking do it.